Okay, here's how Miro works. See, it's amazing.
What's everyone doing at David's desk?
Ever since marketing started using Miro's collaborative online whiteboard, he thinks all our other teams should sign up.
Why?
He says Miro's making his meetings disappear. And if every team gets on it, that means even less meetings. They're using Miro for brainstorms, mind maps, customer research.
So could we use Miro instead of having another 100 meetings for every round of feedback?
Yep. You can comment, react to ideas, even leave a recording on the board.
And what about presentations?
There are Miro templates for that.
How do you know so much about Miro?
I've actually been using it all along. I just used a Miro board to plan the best vacation.
Okay, I'm on board.
See how Miro users save up to 80 hours every year by meeting less and doing more. Get on board at Miro.com with 3 boards free forever. That's Miro.com.
Hello and welcome to another Boys in the Band podcast bonus episode, another My Naughties number one album. I'm Pete Smith, and as ever, I've got Rich Gallagher with me. How are you doing, Rich?
Very good, thanks, mate. Yep, and hope everybody enjoyed the James Walsh episode from Star Sailor over the weekend. It was really good to chat to James. Really good to check out those Star Sailor songs again. Songs I haven't revisited in a while. Forgotten how much I like the likes of Good Souls and Alcoholic, Fever, Force of the Floor, Silence is Easy. Some really big tunes in there that was good to reminisce about with James.
Yeah, definitely. It's always one of the highlights of doing these podcasts, doing these interviews, isn't it? Sort of delving through the back catalogues to do our preparation, Rich, you know, our research. Yeah. We want to make sure we're right up to date with these tunes and have refreshed our memory with them. And I very much enjoyed going back. As I said, I could clearly remember receiving the debut Star Sailor album one Christmas 20 years ago. So, I'm a little bit gutted I didn't go and get some tickets for the 20th anniversary tour. I think that's going to be good fun. And we had some comments, didn't we, from on social media about people who had been in those crowds that were far more lively than perhaps people think they might have been now, as James told us. And some good geeks back in the day. And I reckon if you got a ticket for that, you're in store for a good show. But Rich, yeah, that was sort of making me think, because I was interested actually about how Star Sailor would go down, because I think probably, I don't know, are they considered the coolest band of that era? Probably not. I think that's fair to say. And I think, you know, is that because they, well, I think the sort of, I get saddled with the sort of the acoustic guitar sort of movement, as we mentioned on the podcast a little bit, don't we? Was that a little bit boring, perhaps compared to what came next with the Strokes and the Libertines and that sort of riotous stuff? But, you know, looking back over who we've spoken to in the last few weeks or so on the podcast, Jet, Spinto Band, White Lies, Star Sailor, New Young Pony Club, all prominent acts at different times in the 2000s, but acts who were all quite different to each other or produced, you know, variations on what you'd call indie rock. And indie rock in the 2000s. So lots of sort of subgenres during that time, weren't there? And it's funny now, I guess, where 20 years on, people, you know, have an opinion of what bands should have sounded like during that time, or, you know, what it was legitimately cool to sound like at that time. You know, it's why was the Star Sailor sound, you know, why does that have less credence than some other bands' sounds at that time? I don't know. I think it's an interesting one, how people look back on eras and bands and try and pigeonhole who was good to, who you were allowed to like and who you weren't allowed to like, basically.
Yeah, I think, as you say, they were very, very different subgenres within that indie scene, within the noughties. And I think, like James said, people found their sound at different times. And you know, people who happened to get into Star Sailor at that time, you know, it was right for them at that point. And I think, thinking back, like, I don't really, perhaps as we experienced it, I never really took much notice of that sort of subgenre, as you mentioned, because you know, all of these bands we've had on, you know, liked at different points, and didn't think that, oh well, this isn't noughties indie enough. It's sort of upon reflection all these years later, you know, that you sort of break these down into their sort of different sections.
Yeah,
but they each have their own place, don't they?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, just thinking about that, is that you know, Star Sailor are obviously a band who, you know, okay, they came out in the early 2000s, but they were sort of really on the coattails of Britpop, really, weren't they? And, me and you, when we first really got into music, was during the Britpop era. So it wouldn't have been strange for us at the time for a band like Star Sailor. It wouldn't be strange for us to like a band like that because they, you know, echoed sounds of the mid to late 90s, didn't they, really? Yeah, so absolutely. I think it's such a, you know, it's probably, as you say, when you're in the middle of it, when you're in the thick of it, you just like the bands or you don't like the bands at the time. And I don't think you, during the actual moment, you pay too much attention to, is this the right sound for this scene or whatever. It's, I think it's probably only later on you reflect back and you sort of see groups of bands differently. But I think very much what we've noticed during the podcast is that bands in the early 2000s carried a little bit of a different sound to bands in the middle of the 2000s, and then sort of the makeup and types of bands that you get by the end of the decade again are very different, and it's almost they're getting influenced by the years just before them each time, and you sort of see that evolution through the decade.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right in saying that it's I'm pleased that we were able just to enjoy what we liked. Do you know what I mean? And then just you like what you like, and doesn't really bother you, sort of thing. At the time, it's only sort of when you reflect and you kind of break these down into their different categories that you think more deeply about it. But yeah, so many good bands throughout that whole decade, and I'm really glad we've had that chance to kind of cover the breadth of it, because a lot of the bands that we focused on might have been more from that sort of mid 2000s when the real boom was there. But it's really interesting to look at bands like Star Sailor, who came at the start of the decade, and bands like White Lies that came right at the end, and New Young Pony Club as well. So good to get the whole breadth of the decade and also think about how they influenced each other.
And also, I think the other part of this, you know, if you scroll through our library of podcasts, and what we are, over 50 bands now, aren't we, Rich? Something like that.
Yeah.
And you know, we're not trying to kid anyone here. You know, me and Rich will prefer some bands more than others, but I think what we've found is that each band, regardless of the quality of music that they made, they've got an interesting story to tell about how their journey, you know, through that, whether it was the interesting part is in their sort of formation and what led into their debut album, to interesting parts that came later when they were perhaps more successful. I think the music is just one element of this, and hearing the stories behind how, say, your favorite songs have been written by a certain band's one thing. But also just getting perspective of people who were musicians during that era is really interesting for me.
Yeah, and on that token, it's also really one of the best things about this podcast for us is seeing the impact that these bands had. You know, bands that had some sort of effect on so many people, and it's great to see those people getting in touch with us on social media and messaging us and talking about how much they love this band and the effect they had on them, the impact. And, you know, all of these, this wide variety can obviously impact whole host of people in different ways.
So there you go. No excuses for not having listened to all of our episodes, because they're all packed with great stories of the 2000s. But what was James Walsh inspired by? What band was he loving? Let's find out with his favourite album of the 2000s.
Wilco, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Okay.
It was a really difficult decision because there were so many amazing albums released in that era. Sufjan Stevens, Illinois is another one. Arcade Fire, Funeral. But I think Yankee Hotel Foxtrot is a big one, and not least because of the story behind it and how it was rejected by the label and the band were kind of left all at sea. There's a great documentary all about it. I think it's called I Am Trying to Break Your Heart. The band was all at sea without knowing kind of what to do. I think the label wanted them to change it because it was so different to what they'd done before. They stuck to their guns and made the record they wanted and were eventually proved right when it kind of became one of their biggest records. And I think the themes of the record, the sort of touches on war and some obscure songs like Camera, Jesus, etc. It's just a really, the perfect marriage of like experimentation but maintaining sort of solid melodies and a good heart. It's not a industrial sounding record, despite some of the more scientific or the more electronic sounds on it.
Yeah, I'm Trying to Break Your Heart is the documentary linked with this album. Yeah, so yeah, sounds like worth going to watch that one. Is there a particular sort of song or sort of, you know, how would you recommend people get into this band? Like you are,
I think Jesus Etc. is the big song, the most accessible song. A few people have covered it as well, which is always the testament to Bill Fay's version of Jesus Etc. is beautiful, really worth checking out, along with obviously Wilco's. They've done loads of great albums and loads of great songs. Being There is a great record.
Yeah, great recommendation. I think just scanning through them on Spotify now. Yeah, they've got tons of stuff out there. So good to have a few recommendations as entry points into them. What about live? You ever caught them live?
I saw them at a festival once, and I've watched Jeff Tweedy, the lead singer, do an acoustic show on his own, which was pretty amazing as well. Really good.
Cool. Right. Yeah, good recommendation. Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks very much, James.
Nice one.
So there we have it. James Walsh from Star Sailor has picked Yankee Hotel Foxtrot by Wilco as his My Naughties number one album. Rich, what do you make of that?
Yeah, interesting choice. Not one that that's necessarily come up on the podcast as yet. I remember them sort of back in that Britpop era, actually, weren't they? The sort of the mid to late 90s. Not that they were British, of course, but I just remember them being around at that time, back in the days of working in a record shop in my teens, and seeing the first two albums. What was it? AM and what was the other one? Being There. Those were the two albums I remember. I'm very visual with my album covers. Those are the two album covers that I can remember seeing in the record shop quite a lot. So, but yeah, this album certainly got an interesting story, isn't it, Pete?
Well, it has. Well, James mentioned, didn't he, about how they were ultimately dropped by their record label. Their record label refused to put it out, as they didn't think it was, you know, the end product of what they'd recorded wasn't. I don't know if the idea was it wasn't good enough or it just wasn't the sort of music they were expecting them to produce. But fair play to Wilco for, you know, standing by their art and finding a way to get it out themselves. They ended up streaming the entire album for free on their website in November of 2001. And then they did a deal with Nonesuch Records who actually could put it out properly the following April. And the critics absolutely lapped it up and loved it. And as you know, as James explained during our chat there, how well received it was by musicians and critics alike and by the general audience. I think it got to number 13 on the US Billboard chart, so a real success for them. And I imagine Reprise Records were kicking themselves a little bit.
Yeah.
And then there's also the conspiracy theories, Rich, as well. If you go onto the Wikipedia page for this album, you'll find out some info. But basically, so obviously 2001, September 11th, 2001, the terrorist attacks in New York. This album, strangely, has sort of been linked with those a little bit, even though it was recorded before then. But there's two towers of Marina City on the album cover. Rich mentioned the album cover earlier. What does that say about the World Trade Center towers? There's some semantics of the song titles, for instance, War on War or Ashes of American Flags. And people put in two and two together and coming up with five, I think, there, Rich. I think it's a bit, a bit strange and a bit awkward and, probably not very pleasant and takes away from what Wilco were probably trying to achieve with this album, that sort of talk. But
some strange coincidences, I think. I think there's even a lyric in the album, isn't there? Tall building shake. But, you know, those are three words in the English language that happen to relate to something that happened around that time. So, yeah, a very odd coincidence. But, yeah, it weird that there are those few links, because it was actually due for release originally in September of 2001, wasn't it? So it was really close to the date. But yes, an album definitely well worth checking out. I think James mentioned that particular track, Jesus, Etc., which on Spotify is their most played song. So clearly a fan favourite out there. A good entry point for anybody wanting to get into Wilco. So yeah, definitely go and check them out.
A nice one. All right, guys. Well, that's another Minority's number one in the bag. As we said at the top, go and check out the back catalogue. We've got loads of great podcasts there. If you're just joining us for the first time, hit subscribe because we'll bring you lots more interviews with musicians who soundtracked the noughties indie scene coming up as well.
Cheers, listen. See you next time.
Okay, here's how Miro works. See, it's amazing.
What's everyone doing at David's desk?
Ever since marketing started using Miro's collaborative online whiteboard, he thinks all our other teams should sign up.
Why?
He says Miro's making his meetings disappear. And if every team gets on it, that means even less meetings.
They're using Miro for brainstorms, mind maps, customer research.
So could we use Miro instead of having another 100 meetings for every round of feedback?
Yep. You can comment, react to ideas, even leave a recording on the board.
And what about presentations?
There are Miro templates for that.
How do you know so much about Miro?
I've actually been using it all along. I just used a Miro board to plan the best vacation.
Okay, I'm on board.
See how Miro users save up to 80 hours every year by meeting less and doing more. Get on board at Miro.com with 3 boards free forever. That's Miro.com.